take the training wheels off. "Hey, here's Benjamin Franklin," Tommy said, pointing. Sure enough, Benjamin slowly walked out of the Palace of Westminster. Looked like he could use a long nap. We joined him at the center of the courtyard.
"You were amazing in there," said Tommy. "It was like the Battle of the Minds. It was just like when Professor Xavier from the X-Men uses his mind power to fight off the bad guys. Seriously, you're like an 18th century X-Man."
"Your imagination astounds even me," said Benjamin.
"What exactly is an X-Man?"
"Only the coolest group of superheroes to ever exist. Their whole purpose is to fight for and protect our freedoms." "Yep, Benjamin Franklin is definitely an X-Man." "I have been called a lot of things, but never an X-Man," Benjamin said, laughing.
"Well, I believe you persuaded Parliament to repeal the Stamp Act," I said.
You must be an optimist," said Benjamin with a wide grin. "Only time will tell. But I want to thank you for your support and for the service that you rendered me."
"Thank you, Mr. Franklin, and for all your advice. I'll never forget you," Tommy said.
Benjamin put both hands on Tommy's shoulders, said, "Tommy, you are the future of America. I'm an old man, and today I feel even older. But when I hear your questions and see the light in your eyes, I realize your mind is not much different than mine. Creating new inventions or fulfilling your dreams is simply connecting the dots in your mind. Some ideas have lots of dots, and others just a few. But it is all the same process, dot by dot by dot. The key is to keep going until you reach the final dot. When you do, you will have accomplished something. And with a mind like yours, I know it'll be something great." Finally, he turned to Liberty and said, "How could I forget you?" Liberty smiled and just stood there, beaming. Benjamin placed his hand under Liberty's muzzle and said, "There is no such thing as a coincidence, Liberty. I mean, God knows where every lightning bolt strikes, if you know what I mean." He winked. "Something tells me that you are exactly who you're meant to be. Don't ever forget that." Liberty's lip quivered just a bit, and if he could have, I know he would have given Benjamin Franklin a great big horse hug. "Thank you again, my friend," said Benjamin, "and when you're back in the colonies, if you ever have a chance to meet Patrick Henry, I would highly recommend it. I think he is an exceptional American. He's one of your X-Men," he said, winking at Tommy. "I hope our paths cross again someday." And with that, he tipped his hat, and we parted ways.
"This was way better than I expected," said Tommy.
"No kidding," said Liberty. "He called you Mr. Future of America.
Wow, you're pretty important. I think you should get a T-shirt with Mr. Future of America printed on it."
"Thanks, Liberty, for being my number one fan," said Tommy. "But I think we should keep this a secret between you and me."
"No problem," Liberty said, grinning. "Now we both have secrets. It's like we're secret members of a secret club of secrets.
I hate to break up your secret meeting, but it's time to time jump back to Manchester Middle School." I scanned the courtyard and said, "Let's walk over to that tall hedge. It should conceal our departure. Oh, and Liberty, we can't return to the teacher's lounge. We don't know if Elizabeth is still there."
"I hope freedom's okay," Tommy said.
"I'm more worried about Elizabeth," I said. "I've seen her taunt and tease and insult freedom over and over again. And that kind of thing can be very taxing on a person. One of these days, freedom is going to reach her boiling point, just like the colonies. I would not want to be Elizabeth when that happens."
"Well, I say we jump back to the classroom. It should still be empty since school just ended," Liberty said.
"Just ended? It feels like that was days ago," Tommy sighed.
"Good idea, Liberty. The classroom it is," I said.
We traveled to the nearby hedge, and after making sure that we were alone, Liberty opened a time portal, and we jumped back to the classroom.
"Now I know how Liberty feels. I'm starving," said Tommy as he dismounted from Liberty. You see, said Liberty, I'm not the only one with a big appetite.
Thanks again, Mr. Revere, said Tommy. I better get home. He took off his layer of colonial clothes and put them in his backpack. I like keeping my modern-day clothes underneath. It's so much easier to change. See ya. He smiled and quickly left the classroom. Liberty smiled and said, so what's the plan, Stan? Should we get some to eat, Pete? I tried not to laugh and said, good idea.
Really?
Asked Liberty. Absolutely, I said. We need to keep your energy up. We have more time traveling to do.
When the school bell rang the next day, the students were still busy talking about the previous day's events.
Good afternoon, class, I said. Class fell silent, and I continued. Today, you are going to watch a video that I recently edited where Benjamin Franklin defends the rights of the 13 colonies and asks members of the British Parliament to repeal the Stamp Act. As you watch this video, it will be very easy to imagine what it was like to actually be there. Now, while the documentary is playing, I'm going to slip out to get my horse, Liberty. As promised, Liberty is going to perform for you his Stomp Act about the Stamp Act. I'm going to need a couple of volunteers to help me carry a sound system for Liberty's performance. Several hands shot up in the air. I looked for three specific students to help me, but I only saw two of them. I wonder where Freedom is, I thought.
Tommy and Cam, I said, pointing to the two boys, please join me in the hallway. Now the rest of you can sit back and enjoy the show. Oh, almost forgot. I pulled open my bottom desk drawer and pulled out a bag of bubble gum and another bag of lollipops. You're welcome to a treat while watching the movie. The students eagerly passed around the bag of treats. I walked to the back of the class, dimmed the lights, and started the video projector. I slipped out the door and into the hall where Cam was waiting for me.
Where's Tommy? I asked.
Before Cam could respond, Tommy slipped out of the classroom door and joined us. He tossed a couple of pieces of bubble gum to Cam.
Thanks, Cam said as he caught both pieces in his hands.
Is Cam going to jump with us today? Tommy said as he tossed an unwrapped piece of gum in his mouth.
I smiled and said, he can if he wants to.
Did you say jump?
Aren't we just getting the sound system? Cam asked.
And I'll admit I'm curious to see what your horse does. It looks so real when he moves his lips. It's like he's really talking.
I assume the sound system is what you use for the lip sync?
Tommy looked Cam right in the eye, and without a single sign of a smirk, he said, Cam, this is going to be tough to believe, and it might blow your mind, but you've got to trust me on this. Here's the thing. A talking horse is just the tip of the iceberg. Mr. Revere has discovered how to time travel. We stood there in silence as Cam carefully stared at us. Finally, he said, you guys are serious?
Tommy nodded and looked at me.
It's true, I said. There's really only one way to prove it to you. Would you care to join us outside? Liberty is waiting for us there.
Okay, sure, I'll play along, said Cam. I'll bet there's a flying pig out there, too.
Just don't freak out too much, okay? Said Tommy.
Eh, whatever, Cam said. Let's go find your magical horse. Probably have a leprechaun in your pocket, a genie in your locker.
Don't be ridiculous, Tommy smiled. Leprechauns hate pockets, and a genie's way too powerful to keep captive in a locker.
Tommy thought he was being funny as he laughed at his own joke.
I was amused that Tommy thought he was funny, but Cam only gave a courtesy smile as he followed us outside to join Liberty.
So, where's your horse? Cam asked.
Right here, Liberty said, as he appeared directly behind Cam.
Cam jumped forward like he just stepped on hot coals.
Whoa! Man, you have got to teach me how to do this prank!
His name is Liberty, I said. Liberty, this is Cam, and we've told him about your secret.
Which secret? Liberty asked. Oh, you mean the time I hid inside Disneyland, just before the park closed?
I'd always wanted to do that. Of course, it's not hard to hide when you can turn invisible.
but I thought it would be a lot more fun after hours when everybody was gone. Not so much. All the rides are closed, and there's nothing to eat, so I just wandered through Adventureland and Frontierland and Fantasyland and Liberty, I said. I was referring to your time travel secret. Oh, Liberty said with renewed interest. That secret. Cam had his mouth open. He was staring intently at Liberty. You really shouldn't stare with your mouth open, Liberty said. I mean, no offense, but it's sort of rude. Cam shut his mouth and then opened it and said, he really can talk. Before we go anywhere, Tommy and Cam need these, I said. And opening my travel bag, I pulled out two pairs of colonial clothing. Okay, sure. Why not? Cam laughed. I'll play along. The boys quickly dressed and transformed into 18th century lads. Do I look as funny as you do? Cam asked Tommy. Yep, Tommy said. You should wear those clothes to school. No kidding, Cam laughed. These breeches and stockings are total girl magnets. Make sure you tuck in your shirts, I said. Thanks, Mom, Tommy said with a wink. In an effort to hurry us along, I said, Tommy, why don't you climb up on the Liberty saddle? I was going to have Freedom ride first, but speaking of Freedom, where is she today? Oh, she had a dentist appointment, Tommy said, but she said she was coming back for Liberty's Stomp Act. Well, that's good to know, I said. Cam, why don't you climb up behind Tommy? Okay, sure, said Cam. So where are we going this time, Tommy asked. Cam started laughing. Wait. This is all kinds of whacked out. Are you saying Liberty is how you time travel? Just hold on tight to the saddle, I said. Liberty, we're ready. Rush, rush, rushing to history, Liberty said, as he galloped forward. A purple and gold whirlpool swirled in front of us as the time portal opened. I called out, America, the colony of Virginia, 1765, Patrick Henry. As Liberty, Tommy, and Cam jumped through, I followed closely behind. And just before I jumped, I saw Elizabeth step out from behind the corner of the school. Only 10 yards away, she started running toward the time portal, too. She wouldn't dare jump through after me, would she? In another second, I was through the portal, landed in a darkened alley. Liberty, Tommy, and Cam were waiting for me. I stopped, turned back around toward the portal, waiting, heart racing, eyes tracing the purple and gold to see if anyone else had time jumped. Chapter 5. As the boys dismounted, Liberty asked, why are you staring at the portal like that? You look like you've seen a ghost. I ignored Liberty as I concentrated on the portal. After a couple of seconds, the swirling vortex started shrinking until it disappeared altogether. That was close, I mumbled. I was worried Elizabeth would confront me upon my return to Manchester, but for now, we appeared to be safe. Get behind the building, quick, whispered Tommy, grabbed my arm and pulled me back. Tommy, Cam, and I had our backs against a two-story colonial building with a red brick foundation and wood siding. I looked up, and I saw a solid brick chimney with smoke that drifted up into the sky. I quickly surveyed my surroundings. Even though the sun had just dipped below the neighboring frontier, it was plain to see that this wasn't England. It was a rugged landscape, no trimmed hedges or courtyards. Instead, a grove of trees thick with underbrush created an eerie scene just in front of us. A barking dog could be heard in the distance. I saw a bunch of guys that looked like British soldiers, said Tommy. I don't think they saw us. I peeked around the corner of the building, and I saw about 6 British soldiers who were leaving the establishment. Their red coats made them easy to spot. No wonder the 13 colonies won the war, said Liberty, or peered over my shoulder. Those guys stand out like a cherry on an ice cream sundae. As the soldiers marched away in unison, I said, Liberty, can you verify our location? Yes, Captain. 1765 Virginia. He turned to Tommy and Cam and said, I pay very close attention when Rush Revere announces our future historical destination. In fact, right now, my time travel senses tell me that Patrick Henry is very close by.
Your time travel senses? Tommy asked.
Yep, Liberty nodded.
It's hard to explain.
Is it like a tingling feeling at the base of your skull? Tommy said curiously. Liberty looked surprised and said, actually, yeah. How'd you know?
Tommy smiled. It's the same kind of feeling that Spider-Man gets when he senses danger. His spider sense gives him a psychological awareness of his surroundings.
Sounds like your time travel sense gives you a chronological sense of history as well as a keen awareness of the historical figure that we're looking for.
You mean I have a superpower? Liberty asked, like he'd just found out that school had been canceled.
Wow, I never thought of it like that. Wait, let me try using my super sense.
Liberty closed his eyes as if he were concentrating.
Your horse, he really can talk, said Cam, and we really did jump through some kind of wormhole into the year 1765. He laughed and added, that is sick.
You're sick, Liberty said. Maybe you have time travel motion sickness, you know, like seasickness.
Not sick like ill, he means sick like awesome, Tommy clarified.
Well, that makes no sense at all, said Liberty. I would not be feeling awesome if I were sick.
And suddenly Liberty was distracted by the sound of someone playing the fiddle.
Where is that music coming from? He asked, listening more intently.
I should probably set some ground rules, I said to Tommy and Cam. I want us to be extra cautious, since we've already seen British soldiers, okay? And I don't expect any problems, but you never know.
It's like we're in a virtual world, isn't it? Asked Cam.
Yes, I nodded, except this is not a virtual world. Those redcoats are real, and their swords and bayonets and muskets are real, too. So what I'm saying is, no goofing off. Got it?
Got it, said the boys in unison.
All right. I said, now it looks like we're ready to... Hey, where's Liberty?
He was here a second ago, Cam said.
I cautiously walked around the building to where the front doors were. Across the street was a larger building with a sign that was barely visible. It said Hanover County Courthouse. A few other buildings could be seen up and down the dimly lit street.
Hey, there's Liberty, said Cam, pointing to the building that we were hiding behind.
And it sounds like there's a party going on inside.
Liberty was standing near the front door, bobbing his head to the rhythm of the fiddle. I could also hear several voices talking and laughing from inside the establishment.
What kind of building is this? Tommy asked.
My guess is it's a tavern, I said.
You mean like a bar? Tommy asked.
Yes, I confirmed. And no worries, there aren't any biker gangs in the 18th century.
Liberty walked back to where we were standing and sighed.
Well, I guess this means that I have to stay out here.
We'll be back soon, I said. In the meantime, we need you to keep a lookout for any redcoats, I said.
Oh, that's sort of important, Liberty said. I got you covered.
I noticed Tommy pull something from his pocket.
Have some bubble gum, he said, as he unwrapped the gum and tossed it to Liberty, who snatched it out of the air with his lips.
Oh, I've always wanted to try this, Liberty said as he chewed.
How exactly do you blow a bubble?
Tommy smiled, maneuvered his own piece of gum in his mouth, and then began to blow.
Fascinating, said Liberty.
I rolled my eyes and said, okay, let's enter the tavern.
As we entered, we saw several tables against each wall. Well-dressed men with bright-colored coats and tricorn hats, like the one I wore, were sitting among the tables. Other men with collarless shirts and vests were seated as well, and all the men were wearing breeches, stockings, and leather shoes. Candles flickered at each table, as well as in sconces fixed to the walls. Men were telling stories, drinking from mugs, or playing cards. One man sat alone at an empty table playing the fiddle.
"Let's join the man with the fiddle," I suggested. "Perhaps he can tell us which of these men is Patrick Henry."
"Wait a second," said Cam. "Do you mean the Patrick Henry, as in one of America's founding fathers?"
"The very one," I confirmed.
"No way," Cam beamed. "You know, I'm a history buff, right? Patrick Henry's a rock star. Seriously, I have read his speeches. He was amazing. He's the guy
who said, give me liberty or give me death. That's right, I said. He was one of the most influential champions of the American Revolution. Benjamin Franklin highly recommended that we visit him. Man, this is an awesome field trip. Thanks for inviting me, Cam said. As we approached the man with the fiddle, he stopped playing. He wore a purple vest and linen shirt. His purple coat with gold buttons was thrown over a chair. He looked to be in his late 20s, maybe 30 years old. His hair was neatly combed and pulled back into a short ponytail. Excuse me, sir, I said, but can you tell me which of these men is Patrick Henry?
Patrick Henry, he exclaimed in an animated whisper. You don't want to be associated with him. Haven't you heard? He's a radical. He's an outspoken lawyer that says what he will even if he offends a king.
I was surprised by the man's warning and said, yeah, well, we understand he's an opponent of the King Stamp Act.
Shh, said the man with the fiddle. Don't speak so loudly when you talk about the Stamp Act that way. You want the king's spies to hear you?
Man glanced over our shoulders at the other men in the tavern. Come, sit with me. You tell me what you've heard, and I'll tell you what I've heard about that rabble-rouser, Patrick Henry. We each grabbed a chair and sat around the table. I glanced at the other men who were talking and laughing. Any one of them could be Henry, I supposed, unless he wasn't here. But Liberty seemed so certain about it. Forgive my manners, said our new host. You must be parched. What can I get you to drink?
You're too kind, I said. I'd like some tea.
And what would your servants care to drink? He looked toward Tommy and Cam and said, I assume these are your servants, or perhaps one is your son and the other a slave, a well-dressed slave, I must say. He glanced at Cam's dark skin and clothes. Cam was clearly surprised by the comment, and his face contorted into an odd look of calm and consternation that I hadn't seen in him before. I put my hand on his shoulder, and I was about to say something reassuring, but instead Cam boldly exclaimed, I understand this is 1765, and you aren't enlightened to the reality of freedom for all men yet, but I am free, and I will always be free, just like this country. I was impressed with his strength and composure in a difficult moment. The fiddler smiled and looked thoroughly impressed with Cam. He said, well, I certainly do apologize, young man. I meant no offense. Tommy looked relieved. Suddenly, the fiddler jumped up onto his chair, and with a foot on the table and his fiddle underneath his chin, he began to play a fervent tune while tapping his foot. I looked at Tommy and Cam, who were all smiles. Tommy looked back at me and mouthed the words, I think this guy is nuts. Cam nodded with enthusiasm. Gave me the universal symbol for crazy by twirling his finger near the side of his head. And just when I thought it couldn't get any stranger, the fiddler stopped playing and sprang with both feet on top of the wooden table. And that's when he started singing and acting out his song. Our worthy forefathers, let's give them a cheer. To claimants unknown did courageously steer. Through oceans to deserts for freedom they came. And dying bequeathed us their freedom and fame. The room burst into applause and cheers. Some of the men were louder than others, but all seemed to applaud the man's song. The men soon returned to their own conversations, and the room became quiet, as it had been before. The fiddler stepped down and patted Cam on the shoulder. We shall all drink to freedom tonight, said the fiddler. With whom do I have the pleasure of drinking? I replied, this is Tommy and Cam, my apprentices, and my name is Rush Revere. I'm a history teacher, and I was...
Revere, you say?
Are you related to Paul Revere?
I believe I am, I exclaimed. I mean, I've not actually met him, but I'm a great admirer, and we fight for the same cause.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, the man said, smiling. Now then, perhaps Tommy and Cam would enjoy a cup of chocolate.
That sounds great, Tommy said. Thank you.
Yeah, Cam said with a wink. Freedom and chocolate, definitely worth fighting for. The man laughed and waved at the barkeep, who walked over to our table and took our orders. When he left, I asked, where do you think we could find Patrick Henry? You'd better be off without him, the man sniffed. I heard he just gave a speech at the House of Burgesses in Virginia's capital, Williamsburg, and they say he spoke like thunder as he defended the rights of the colonies. He attacked the Stamp Act. He said the British Empire had no right to tax the American colonies. He said if we don't stop King George III now, he'll keep taxing the people until he has us all in chains. I'm curious, what did the people say when they heard his speech, I asked. Ha! The governor of Virginia was furious, said the man, who picked up his fiddle again. Especially when Patrick Henry said the stamp tax was a threat to our liberty. That's when some of the aldermen cried, treason! The man played a fast and gloomy tune on his fiddle. He stopped playing and continued. People say Patrick Henry is verbally attacking the king. Would you believe he actually compared King George to Julius Caesar and Charles I? Wow, that's harsh, Cam said. Julius Caesar was a Roman dictator. King Charles was beheaded for crimes against England. Sounds like Patrick Henry is really going out on a dangerous limb here. He's putting himself at risk. Perhaps your Patrick Henry values the cause of freedom more than his life, said the fiddler. That's why I like him so much, said Cam, as he looked around the room. I'd really like to meet him. I was hoping he could give me a few tips on how to speak like thunder. I'm thinking about running for student body president. Speaking like thunder could come in handy. Cam stood up from his chair and mimicked his presidential speech, declaring, Students of America, you say you want freedom to speak your mind. You say you want your voice to be heard. You say you want a leader who'll defend your rights and extend your lunch hour. If you vote for me, I promise liberty and justice for all. Now, Liberty must have thought somebody called his name because his head briefly appeared in the window and I saw him rigorously chewing his bubble gum. At least he wasn't getting into any trouble. As Cam sat down, the fiddler stood up and began to applaud. In a booming voice, he said, You have my vote. You are a most excellent orator, Cam, and you are brave to be so bold. Never let fear stop you from saying what needs to be said. The barkeep of the tavern politely interrupted and set our beverages on the table. Wisps of steam rose from the silver mugs. Tommy leaned over his mug and smelled the wafting aroma of chocolate. Wow, that smells delicious! Cam sipped from his mug and said, It's a little different than what we have back home. This is creamier and a little bit sour. And where is back home for you? Asked the fiddler. We just moved from Colorado. My dad's in the military, so we move every year or so. I guess I really don't have a place that I call home, Cam replied. Colorado, the man asked. Is this a new settlement in the West? I've not heard of it. Just then the door burst open, and a young man about 17 or 18 burst into the tavern. The men on either side of the room turned to see who or what the ruckus was. The boy took off his tricorn hat and wiped his brow. He scanned the room quickly and then rushed over to our table and tossed several newspapers in front of our host. I brought the newspapers just like you asked, Mr. Henry, the boy panted. The other messengers arrived just like you said they would, from Maryland and Rhode Island and Massachusetts and other colonies. They've all printed your 7 resolutions against the Stamp Act. It looks like the colonies have united in opposing the stamp tax. Henry? I asked the boy. You mean Patrick Henry? I asked again, this time turning to the man with the fiddle. Patrick Henry gave a big, hearty laugh to match Cam's wide smile. I'm afraid you're sitting with the treasonous radical who defies the King of England, thundered Patrick with a giant grin. I could hardly believe my ears. All this time, we were sitting with one of the legendary forefathers of America. I blushed. I said, Forgive me, Mr. Henry, I should have recognized you earlier. Recognized me, asked Patrick. Have we met before? I realized I couldn't tell him that his picture is in every American history book. He means he should have recognized your voice of thunder, Cam joked. Patrick laughed and said, Cam, I enjoy your company. After a moment, he became more serious and exclaimed, Well, now that you know who I am, I want you to know something about me, something that's troubled me for years. He turned to look at Cam and said somberly, "The truth is, I'm very sorry to report that I own slaves." "Why?" Cam asked sincerely. "How can you say that you're fighting for freedom and still own slaves? Isn't that hypocritical?" "Slavery has become an important part of the economy here in the South," said Patrick. "But I've felt a great need to change the way things are in these southern colonies. Truly, I have felt tormented as my soul has wrestled with the owning of slaves, and I've come to realize that this wicked practice must come to an end. If we truly want to be a free people, a free land, a free America, then we must free the slaves. God cannot bless a country that allows the bondage and captivity of men, women, and children." He took a deep breath and sighed, and said, "Indeed, I believe a time will come when we shall abolish this lamentable evil called slavery." Cam said, "That sounds like a very good start." And then Cam raised his hand and said, "High five." He prompted Patrick to raise his hand as well. Patrick slowly lifted his hand, and Cam slapped his upraised palm. Curious, Patrick asked, "You call that a high five?" "Yeah," Cam replied. "It's a gesture of triumph or success. It also means we're friends." "I like the high five," said Patrick. "Wait until you learn the chest bump," Tommy smiled. Patrick noticed that the boy who had delivered the newspapers was watching with great curiosity about 5 feet away. Patrick flipped the boy a large silver coin. Boy caught it in the air. "Thank you, Mr. Henry," said the teenage boy, grinning from ear to ear. "If you'll excuse me, sir, there's a peculiar horse out in the front of the tavern that caught my attention." "Why did you say peculiar horse?" I asked nervously. The boy replied with wonder, "Well, in truth, this horse had a large pink bubble attached to his mouth. It was small at first, but then it grew to the size of a cantaloupe until it finally popped. And then the horse used his tongue to lick up the pink sap that stuck to his nose and his lips until it was all back in his mouth, and he began chewing it. I'm hoping he'll do it again. I have never seen anything like it." "Cam and I will come with you," Tommy said. "I'm pretty sure I know what it is." The boys got up from the table, thanked Mr. Henry for the hot chocolate, and exited the tavern. As Patrick Henry browsed the first newspaper, I took out my phone. I slipped it under the table, typed a quick Facebook entry, "Virginia, 1765, sitting here drinking tea with Patrick Henry." Historians say that he was the man who sparked America's revolution. His 7 resolutions to the Stamp Act articulated why America should reject and resist British taxation on the colonies. And this brought on the Revolutionary War and finally separated America and England and gave independence to the colonies, which eventually became the United States of America. "Listen to this," said Patrick as he read from the newspaper he was holding. "This writer reports on my speeches and my opposition to the king and his parliament. He writes, 'The tendons on Patrick Henry's neck stood out white and rigid like whipcords. His voice rose louder and louder until the walls of the building seemed to shake. Men leaned forward in their seats, their faces pale.'" Patrick's laughter seemed to bounce off the walls. When he stopped, he said, "They're scared of what the king'll do when he finds out the colonies refuse to pay his stamp tax. What the king needs to understand is that before we will obey his laws, we must have representation in parliament. We want to help create the laws for the colonies. And we demand the right to have our voices heard in England." I realized my jaw was open as I listened to Patrick Henry defend the colonies. I finally said, "I admire your fearlessness speaking out against the king, but you realize if your words get back to England, the king is bound to send his redcoats after you for treason. This is serious. They may hang you." With a smile on his face and a steely gaze in his eyes, he said, "If this be treason, make the most of it." As if on cue, the door burst open again, and Tommy stood in the doorway. Panicked, he said, "Mr. Revere, you better get out here. Cam's in trouble, the Redcoats are back, and they've arrested him." Patrick and I sprang from the table and followed Tommy out of the tavern. It was nearly dark outside, and one of three British soldiers held a torch. Patrick was the first to reach the second soldier, who was nearest to Cam. His hands were cuffed. He shrugged when I looked at him. Tommy and the messenger boy were watching close by.
"What's the meaning of this?" shouted Patrick. His voice did sound like thunder. The second soldier took a step back. Feeling threatened, a third soldier unsheathed his sword and held it in front of him. The first soldier did the same. "It was an accident," Cam said, defending himself. Tommy leaned close to me and whispered, "Liberty was tired of chewing his gum, so Cam told him to spit it out. And I sort of dared him to try and hit one of the soldiers as they walked by the tavern. And the soldier was at least 20 yards away. I didn't think he'd actually do it." Second soldier, who must have put the cuffs on Cam, stepped forward and said, "Your slave threw a wad of pink sap and hit me in the side of the head." The soldier turned, and sure enough, a sticky mass of gum looked like it had been pulled from his hair, but it was still a gooey mess.
"He's not a slave," shouted Tommy.
"Shut up, colonial dog," yelled one of the soldiers. And before Tommy could react, the soldier closest to him swung the butt of his gun into Tommy's head and knocked him down.
"Enough of this!" I screamed,
as I rushed over to make sure Tommy wasn't hurt. Tommy pulled his hand away from where the gun had hit his head, found blood on his fingers. I quickly examined the cut, and I said, "It's not bad. Barely broke the skin, but you are going to have a goose egg in the side of your head." I looked up and I saw Patrick ready to make his move. He remained calm, but I could tell he was also worried about Tommy and nervous for his young friend Cam. Cam nervously laughed and said, "I didn't throw it." His eyes darted toward Liberty, who was doing an excellent job at pretending to be just a horse. Cam firmly said, "You didn't see me throw it. You didn't see any of us throw it. I have rights. Where's a lawyer when I need one?"
"I am a lawyer," said Patrick Henry, and he walked closer to the soldier near Cam, but the two soldiers with swords stood firm. Hearing the shouts and yells, the men from the tavern came outside to see Tommy bleeding and Cam in cuffs. Their expressions turned from concern for the young boys to anger at the soldiers. Patrick shouted, "England will always consider us inferior. I have seen the way you lobster backs laugh at how we talk and the way we dress. You've forgotten we are still British subjects. Now you believe we're dim-witted farmers and ill-suited merchants. You'd sooner keep us in a barn than invite us into your chambers as equals."
"You will never be our equals, colonial scum," said the soldier in the middle.
"Now get out of our way before we lock you up with the slave. You know better than filthy rats. We should lock up the whole lot of you, let you rot in chains."
The men from the tavern started murmuring and cursing the soldiers. These were blacksmiths, carpenters, and farmers, men with burly arms, itching to fight. The redcoats knew they were outnumbered, but they stood their ground. The soldier holding a torch in one hand and his sword in the other sneered at Patrick and said, "We are taking our prisoner, and he will be judged according to his crimes. Now get out of the way." Cam's jaw dropped in desperation. He said, "Uh-oh, guys, help me, somebody." Patrick Henry looked as determined as ever and bellowed, "Crimes? You dare speak of crimes? I will tell you who the criminals are. The men who sit in Parliament and a king who burdens his people with unfair taxes."
"Your words convict you of treason," said the first soldier. "You could hang for that."
"As I've said before, if this be treason, make the most of it," said Patrick.
"I spit on your stamp tax," Patrick spit to the right.
"You're lucky to be walking freely in these streets," said the first soldier. "We have direct orders from the king to put you in jail for any disrespect to the crown."
"The king is the one disrespecting our freedom," said Patrick, taking a step closer. "How dare he demand that we open our homes to house redcoats like you? You are not our guests. You don't even like the people of these colonies. You just want to keep control of us. We worked hard to build these colonies. How dare the king force us to take you into our homes? This law is absurd. I spit on what the king is calling the Quartering Act. Patrick spit again. You redcoats will not step foot inside of my home. Watch your tongue, patriot, before we cut it out, said the third soldier, who now pointed his sword directly at Patrick Henry. But Patrick did not back down. He turned to the men from the tavern and shouted, If we do not oppose the Quartering Act, the redcoats will soon be tossing your families from their bedchambers in order to move in. Your wives and your children will be out in the streets, and all because the king is an oppressive, arrogant, and selfish tyrant who only cares about three things, taxes, taxes, and more taxes. The colonists behind us shouted and jeered at the injustice in front of them. Let them go, said a large colonist with the neck the size of Rhode Island. That's when I noticed Liberty behind the soldier with the torch. While Patrick Henry was speaking, he must have slipped behind unnoticed. Before the soldiers could react, Liberty turned his hind legs toward his target and gently kicked the unsuspecting soldier in the rear end. Even a gentle kick sent the redcoat 4 feet into the air. He landed with a thud in front of us, his torch and sword rolling to our feet. I took the torch. Tommy took the sword. As if to prove a point, the third soldier raised his sword and attempted to strike down Patrick. The blade was deflected as Tommy parried with his own sword. Again and again, the two swords clashed, and remarkably, it looked like Tommy had the upper hand. As the soldier stumbled backward, Liberty conveniently tripped him, and the soldier fell to the ground. The colonists cheered at the momentary victory and pressed forward against the three redcoats, who quickly retreated, leaving Cam standing alone and handcuffed. It would be wise for us all to leave this place for a time, said Patrick, as the men dispersed from the tavern. We can expect more redcoats, and they'll want revenge. Do you have a place to go? Yes, we'll be safe, I said, and thank you for your help today. No kidding, said Cam. You basically saved my life. I try to save at least one life a day, Patrick winked. Lucky for you, I had not yet filled my quota. We all laughed, and Patrick finally said, Cam, you are a remarkable young man. It took me a long time to have the confidence to stand up for what I wanted to do, who I wanted to be. But I found that I'm happier when I am defending freedom and helping others find liberty and justice. Me too, said Cam. When I was younger, I was a military brat. My family had just moved to a new city, and it's never easy starting over at a new school. And to make it worse, I was as little runt of a kid. These bigger kids at my old school used to bully me. They did some really mean things. One time they tossed me into a trash can upside down. But one summer, I had a huge growth spurt. I grew 7 inches, gained almost 10 pounds. That's the year I decided to act and not be acted upon. So now, whenever I see someone being bullied, I don't stand for it. I can't help it. I like defending the little guy. I like helping others find liberty and justice, too. Patrick smiled and said, The truth is, you remind me of me when I was younger. You have a gift for words, a clever mind, sense of humor. No wonder I feel like we're kindred spirits. He reached out to shake Cam's hand, but the handcuffs made it awkward. Cam laughed. Oops, forgot about the cuffs. Patrick smiled and gently placed his hand on Cam's shoulder. He looked Cam straight in the eye. Said, I will not forget about the evils of slavery. I promise, as God is my witness, I will give my life for the cause of freedom for all men. Goodbye, Mr. Henry, said Tommy. Goodbye, Tommy, Patrick said, beaming. You are quite the swordsman. I had a good teacher, said Tommy. With all the practice he had with Miles Standish, the Pilgrim's military leader, it's no surprise that he fought like he did. Miles would be proud. Safe travels, Rush Revere, said Patrick, until we meet again. He turned to enter the tavern for his fiddle and coat. I turned back to Tommy, Cam, and Liberty and said that was quite the adventure, but I am ready to return to modern day. Me too, they all said in unison. As we walked to the back of the tavern, I took a deep breath, and I said there's a chance that we'll run into Elizabeth when we return to the school. Why do you say that? Tommy asked. Because when we time-jumped to visit Patrick Henry, she was chasing after us and nearly jumped through the time portal before it closed. What? Tommy exclaimed. Hey, maybe we can get Elizabeth to shoot laser beams out of her eyes, said Liberty. How's that gonna help us? Complained Tommy. Well, somebody's gotta get those handcuffs off, Cam, said Liberty. Now we're talking, Cam said with a chuckle. But laser beams really aren't my first choice. No worries, I told him as I reached into Liberty's saddlebag in search of a solution to Cam's dilemma. Ah, here it is. That is one odd-looking key, Cam said. It's a skeleton key, and it can pick any 18th-century lock. I inserted the key into the lock of Cam's handcuffs, and presto! Boy, I can't tell you how good it feels to be free, exclaimed Cam. I nodded, and I said, it's a great feeling, isn't it? And likewise, the laws and taxes that the king and parliament keep mandating to the colonies are like handcuffs. They restrict and bind the colonists from living and growing and being a free America. Never thought of it like that. We're going to need a much bigger key to unlock that problem, Cam said. No kidding, Tommy agreed. I think it's called a revolution. Tommy and Cam lifted themselves up onto Liberty's saddle. Now, about Elizabeth, we need to return to some place different than where we left. Hmm, said Liberty. Well, how about in the hallway in front of our classroom? We've done that before. Can your time travel sense tell us if anyone is in the hallway? Cam asked. It's worked before, Liberty said. I mean, I'm still trying to figure all of this out, but I think I can do it so no one sees us. Okay, then, let's go, I said. Tommy, how's the cut on your head? It feels like a linebacker hit me without my football helmet on, Tommy said with a smile, but besides that, I'm good. I sighed, relieved that we were leaving without further harm. That was a tough one for all of us, I said. I'm just glad you're both okay. Liberty, take us home. Rush, rush, rushing from history, Liberty said. In the dark of the night, the time portal opened again, and as we headed toward the swirling circular light, I readied myself for whatever was waiting for us on the other side. Chapter 6. The fluorescent lights in the school hallway made me squint as we returned to the 21st century. Once again, Liberty hit the bullseye as we landed in front of our classroom door. I quickly surveyed the scene and noticed we were alone. Relieved, I said, "Nice jumping, Liberty. Now, you boys need to change your clothes," and just then I heard a single pair of footsteps running down the connecting hallway. The footsteps were getting louder. I assumed we returned just seconds after we had left, just seconds after Elizabeth had seen us jump through the time portal. I was certain those were her footsteps racing back to my classroom to prove that I was a neglectful and delinquent teacher. The footsteps sounded like they would turn the corner any second, and Elizabeth would find us. I desperately called Liberty, who was already disappearing, but the boys were still sitting on top of, well, nothing. Oops, said Tommy. I thought we'd turn invisible with Liberty if we were sitting on top of it. Still 5 feet off the ground, they quickly kicked their legs over to one side and slipped off an invisible saddle. Freedom stood there and smiled. Real slick, guys, she said, nearly laughing. You're lucky it's just me. Why were you running down the hallway like that, I asked. When my grandfather dropped me off in front of the school, I sprinted to the classroom, hoping I could still catch you before you time-jumped.
but by the look of things, I'm guessing you just returned.
It was incredible, said Cam, like he had just come off a wild roller coaster. We traveled to the year 1765 and met Patrick Henry.
And I learned how to blow a bubble with bubble gum, said Liberty.
I thought you were going to be at the dentist today, asked Tommy apologetically. You told me you wouldn't be back until almost the end of class.
Freedom shrugged her shoulders and said, no cavities.
You're lucky, Cam said. The worst part's when the dentist has to numb your gums. I mean, I'm glad for the anesthesia. It's the shot I don't like.
Anesthesia, spelled A-N-E-S-T-H-E-S-I-A, said Liberty proudly.
Now, give Tommy a word, see if he can spell it. We're having a spelling bee competition,
unless Tommy's scared, Liberty taunted.
Of course, he shouldn't feel bad losing to a horse, since technically I'm no ordinary horse, although I look ordinary. But most people who do extraordinary things appear ordinary at first, until the moment they...
Thanks, Liberty, Freedom said with a smirk.
You just gave me an idea. Tommy, spell the word logorrhea.
Huh? Tommy said, raising an eyebrow.
Liberty smiled and said, I don't know what the word means, but I approve of your word choice.
Tommy took off his hat and scratched his head.
Can you give me that in a sentence?
Sure, said Freedom.
Liberty's logorrhea can go on and on, but it's one of the things I like about it.
Oh, I think I know, Tommy said, smiling.
Logorrhea. It's spelled L-O-G-O-R-R-H-E-A.
Correct, Freedom said.
Wait a minute, said Liberty suspiciously. Are you saying that you have a big mouth and talk too much?
Yes, said Elizabeth, who appeared from behind the hallway corner. She wore a long red coat with designer jeans and a matching red headband in her hair.
My, 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 what do we have here?
Elizabeth slowly walked in between us with her hands behind her back. She stared at each of us and talked as if she knew a secret.
Do any of you have hall passes?
No, I'm sure you don't, because that would require one of you to have a responsible teacher.
She glared at me and then looked away.
Do any of you have any fashion sense at all?
She stopped in front of Freedom with a look of disdain.
Freedom, or should I just call you Freedom?
That's spelled D-U-M-B.
By the way, you look better in that hideous pilgrim costume that should have been burned in the 17th century.
She released her gaze and finally approached Liberty.
Oh, and finally, do any of you have a permit for this?
She scrunched up her nose in disgust. This odoriferous horse inside Manchester Middle School?
Odoriferous, said Liberty. For the record, I'm hardly offended by your weak insult.
Well, that wasn't an insult, Elizabeth said. That was simply a fact. I'm sure you know that odoriferous means smelly. Personally, I don't like the smell of horses. It's a foul stench. Belongs in a barn, not a school.
Elizabeth turned to look at all of us and said, I am on to your little secret. I saw you jump through that magical door thingy.